Hi everyone, how you doing? Welcome to Hello Esports, a podcast by Orange, Lutzeboya Journal and the Luxembourg Esports Federation about all things esports in Luxembourg. My name is Maxim and I'm your host. On our last episode, a behind-the-scenes look at Luxembourg's esports clubs showed us their ecosystem's flaws. One of those flaws is that most clubs lack a real academy structure that develops young talents with the help of coaches. To join the first team of a club, teenagers who want to make a career in esports have to train by themselves to get better and perform well in order to be scouted. This opens the door to a risk that doesn't exist in other sports, and that will be the topic of today's episode. It's the risk of becoming addicted to a video game. To address this matter as accurately as it gets, I'll have Dr. Andreas König from Ausgespielt on my side during the next 20 minutes or so.
My name is Andreas König. I'm a psychologist and psychotherapist, and I am head of the Counseling, Therapy and Prevention Center Ausgespielt/Game Over, which will shortly be renamed into Center für Exzessiv Verhalten auf Verhaltenssucht, in English, Center for Excessive Behavior and Behavioral Addictions.
Of course, video games themselves, their storylines and competitive multiplayer modes are addiction-prone activities even if you play for fun. You sit on your couch, controller in your hands, earphones on, and all of a sudden, hours have gone by without you even noticing. But for a young athlete who only knows practice as a way to get better and who lacks fixed training time set by a club, addiction is almost inevitable. To talk about that, I'm joined by Stefan, who experienced just that. Back in his university days, he developed an addiction to World of Warcraft.
My name is Stefan. I am 30 years old. I am running or managing a construction company in Luxembourg. And I like games, so I used to play a lot of games. These days, not so many anymore.
I was very curious to jump into the head of someone who's been addicted to video games and see life through his eyes. I had a bag full of questions, but before that, I wanted to understand his path to addiction, starting with the first game he ever bought.
Buying, I don't know, but the obvious game that comes to mind is, Super Mario 64 on the Nintendo 64?
It's me, Mario!
I was born in 92, so I guess, 97, 98 is when I started touching games.
Okay. So do you still play today? You said maybe not so much, but...
No, not so much anymore, although it's... So I avoid online games, or if I play them.
So really games with storylines.
Storylines, and I like games with I can play with one friend.
Okay.
So then it's either we take a weekend or an evening off. Because we all have responsibilities now.
A big binge play in during the weekend and then back to normal, to serious.
Yes. What I don't like anymore is the everyday playing. So when I play, I also at least 6 hours are blocked, and then I try and often more.
Okay, so you don't play online anymore, you don't play competitive anymore, but you used to back in your studies days.
Indeed. Yes, I played very competitively World of Warcraft.
Okay.
I don't know if people... Well, it still exists. I don't know how many people still remember it for how big it was back then.
Yeah.
It was at that time really the game that was online, that was that had an open world, and that was both roleplay and competitive. I mean, now people still know it, but it was big then.
And you were quite high ranked as well.
Yes. So I used to play mostly arena, and that was 3v3. That was the competitive bracket. So my best ranking was that was in Cataclysm around 2011, 2012, and we were number 12. Our team was ranked 12 in the European pool.
So that's massive. That's very
high.
Yes,
that was very good. It was very difficult and it took a lot of time.
And you were back then, so study time. So you were in Luxembourg or were you...
No, at that point I was studying in London.
Okay.
And that was my first and second year of university.
Video games are a passion that can quickly become an addiction if we don't limit our gaming time. First, we play for fun, to pass the time, then to compete, and suddenly we're stuck in a virtual world unable to get out. But what is addiction really like?
Great question to start with the definition of it, because I don't think it means playing a lot. So I skipped that part now, but I think I remember at the height I played on average, because you can see exactly how much you play. You can, it's written down. And you know, on my online time was over 8 hours on average for those six per day for 6 months or more.
Okay.
So even just having one day where you're perhaps sick or with your parents or something or visiting friends, you have to compensate that. So 8 hours, and then probably I was still sleeping 8 hours.
So it's almost like if you go to work, you're like, okay, if I lose 2 hours here, I'm going to have to add them maybe into the night or something like that.
It was more that this was the one thing I did and everything turned around it. But I would call addiction, and that's also what I encountered, is when you start thinking about whether you want to play or should be playing, and you think there's a trade-off and it hurts other areas in your life that you want to spend more time and attention on, and you don't do it despite yourself.
The gaming disorder, that's what it's called, is has been recognized by the WHO in the International Classification of Diseases, and there it's described as a pattern of gaming behavior that is characterized by an impaired control over gaming and by an increasing priority giving to gaming over other activities. And you do that to such an extent that gaming takes precedence over other interests and daily activities. And you continue to do so despite negative consequences, or you even escalate gaming and do more of it despite negative consequences already occurring. And in order for gaming disorder to be diagnosed, you have to perform that behavior over at least 12 months. So not every time there's a new game and you're really excited about that and you spend a lot of time fulfilling some criteria, you would be diagnosed as an addict.
And this could be obviously school. It could be your girlfriend, your boyfriend. It could be anything, really. It could be your health, working out, anything you like to do. It could be another game, even. Like, I think that's a funny way. Like, maybe you want to play more another game and you realize you always go back to the first one.
Loyal to World of Warcraft.
Yes. Yeah. I was playing almost only. That's a good point. Friends would want to play with me other games, and I couldn't do it. And I don't think it would have hurt my ranking or anything if I had played 1 hour of something else. Maybe it would have been actually good to diversify a bit. But I was addicted to that game.
Yeah, it's a bit like your mind is clouded with the game.
And that's also where the games, I think, are tricky, because they're designed to tap into how your mind works. I mean, today we all mostly know that swiping TikTok or Instagram, how that triggers this serotonin or dopamine. I think it's dopamine, but that's the idea. And here it's similar. It rewards you in ways that real life doesn't necessarily reward you. And these games are difficult, challenging, but in a predictable way. So it's very satisfying and it makes you feel good. To me, you might lose, but you lose in a predictable way, so you know how to improve. And that, at least for me, that was the fun. So I knew exactly what I had to do to improve. And then you get really, really into it. Then you start reading up on all the different, this was World of Warcraft, could be any game, but regularly there would be patches. You want to know in advance, how do they change? How do the classes work? Other gamers develop new tactics, and you want to be quick to hear about them. So you have to develop a network, social network. You need to be, and for that you need to be online. You chat with people, you understand what's going on. Back then it was TeamSpeak, today it's Discord, but then you want to be online. And there's all these other things that go around. I don't think you could be very, very good if you don't do all those things. And at that point, you feel much more comfortable and at home in that world, exactly, than in the real life. That's
it
just
kind of
stressful.
Becomes your home, maybe.
Yes. And that's where it's not necessarily bad. So I think that's my pushback. Gaming is not necessarily bad. It's pretty cool. I think back to that time with a lot of fondness. I'm very proud. That's why I'm online here with you on the podcast.
You put it on your CV at some point.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I told you about that. Exactly. Yeah. No, I used to always put it on my CV. I put university and grades and this and that. And then I said, number 12 in this game. So I think it's a good sales point. Whether you're a basketball champion or gaming champion, it requires a lot of dedication.
Yeah.
And maybe also here, that's something we talked about. I think addiction gets into the way of performance. So this being, because you talk to a lot of actual esports pros and people who want to become really good, I noticed that the addiction was also bad for my performance. Like if I played 10 hours in the night until 3 a.m., those games between 1 and 3 a.m., they were not productive anymore. I was teaching myself bad reflexes. Yeah. I was too tired to apply the tactics anymore. I might get frustrated with my teammates, so it was bad for our morale. And all of that matters, of course.
Mostly, we don't see addiction coming. Once we ask ourselves if we might be addicted, we already are, especially with video games. The biggest risk, though, is for the virtual world we're addicted to impact our real life, as Stefan already told us. So I felt like digging a little bit deeper and asked him for concrete examples.
These are stories to tell 10 years later. Yeah. I think my parents wouldn't like hearing them. But now it all is good. There are a few... So this one is less funny, but it's more what I think people will recognize. It's that outside of gaming, I would think constantly about how I could improve my play in the game. So you walk to school. I wasn't even thinking what class I would have. I think, okay, what could I do? Can I CC this guy and then here? And what was the cooldown on that thing again? Okay, that means this and that. And we should try this thing. And okay, is he online tonight? Like, this is what you're thinking about instead of even outside. So that was one. The more funny things were, I think I literally, after a night of gaming, I attended a class. I arrived 2 minutes past the hour and I sat down thinking I was 2 minutes late. Actually, I was 2 hours late and the class was just a few minutes running over.
Okay.
So I sit down and everyone thinks, Stefan, what is he doing? Like, why is he's 2 hours late and now we are ending the class now. And I just sat down, took my stuff out. And so I think that was a completely ridiculous thing. It showed how I was completely out of the normal cycles of class. And of course that, and now maybe less funny even, that then translates obviously into, I mean, then you, if you're not even in class, how do you want to succeed in your exams? And that's also where then alarm bells started to ring for myself. And where I had to ask myself the question, like, what are my priorities?
The thing is that you often don't know until it's too late, and that has to do with the criterion of control, which is really a gray area where you gradually lose control, and you still think you have it, and therefore you don't test it if you're able to stick to your time plans or do without your game for a while. And there are several criteria that you might notice about yourself, and none of which is sufficient. But if you have a couple of them, you might think about like reducing or getting professional help. And one would be that you think about your game and how to complete a task or a level, even when you're not supposed to do that. And like in school or at work, and you start thinking about your game all the time. Also, if you experience negative consequences, like your concentration in other areas goes down, your grades in school get worse, your performance at work gets worse, you have conflicts with others because you neglect them, you spend no time with them, you might neglect your health or your social life. You get kicked out of your soccer club because you don't appear.
I think the more sneaky thing was that I had a feeling of control over all of over the gaming. And that's what you can ask. I think it's people who smoke or drink and they'll say, oh, I can stop tomorrow if I want. Mm-hmm. And that's a tricky answer. And for me, it was the same. So I had exams all in May at the end of the year. And I did actually stop playing. I always remember the 2 years I stopped playing in at the end of April. So three weeks roughly before the exams. I completely, you know, I told my teammates I have to be offline now for 3 or 4 weeks because I have to focus on the exams. And my first year actually managed to be decent. Mm-hmm. Like my grades were okay. Just, I don't know, I got lucky.
Yeah.
And so I deluded myself and this is completely fine. And then the second year, I still succeeded in most, but one, I really completely failed.
Do we know any numbers? Like, for example, how many addicted gamers in esports? Do we have a percentage or a knowledge about that?
To account for sampling and other errors, you usually look at reviews and meta-analysis, which combine and sum up the results of many single studies. And I only know of one review that looked specifically into competitive esports. And basically, it said that existing studies are often flawed or maybe industry funded and therefore biased. They don't declare conflicts of interest and so forth, and that there is no consensus on how to differentiate between esports and other playing. So we need more research. But the general prevalence among people between 12 and 40 years is about 4.6%. That has been shown in a lot of studies and meta-analysis over 20 years. So it's about one of 22 young people who is considered addicted. With the promotion of esports, it's at least reasonable to expect that these numbers might rise.
Everybody can become addicted to a video game, even if their goal isn't to climb up the rankings. Still, I feel like it's way more likely for an esports athlete to cop an addiction than for someone who plays for fun. And that for different reasons. So I was very curious to discover if our guests would agree with me.
Because you're already good, let's say you're talented or you're just already quite advanced. First of all, I think the game usually is more fun. If you're good at something and you're winning, more fun. Second, it's easier to delude yourself that what you're doing is productive because you're winning, because there's and increasingly today, because there is some money going around, because there are some tournaments happening, so there's some status to be gained with that, some fame. So you are there's another factor that makes it all look better. And again, I think you can be an esports pro without being addicted. But
of course,
it's so if you're also addicted, the fact that you're good hides a lot of the problems. And then even worse, I think for those, and that I think was my situation, that are not exactly number one, you're close enough to see all this and to feel all that. And so you delude yourself that this could be a thing.
I guess there are some things that can trigger addiction and that game producers know about. I feel like the best strategy for a company is to get your clients, your customers addicted to what you have to offer so that they always come back. So can we say that maybe the game producers have as a goal to get their players addicted? Are they to blame?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. I'd simply say that the goal of the industry is not addiction, but to make more money. The gaming industry is one of the biggest and fastest growing branches now. It's much bigger than the pharmaceutical industry. It has billions of revenue. And in order to do so, you need to get people to spend as much time with it as possible where they can spend money, for example, on in-app purchases. The industry has basically not really an interest in player protection except whitewashing. One thing they might be to blame is trying to make you think that the likelihood of becoming a professional is quite big because it's actually small of becoming a professional musician or a normal athlete.
And all of that is a bad mix. Whereas if you're clearly bad and you lose all the time, then you take it easy.
Yeah.
And
so you probably would have stopped earlier if you hadn't had come to a point like 12th in Europe, in your opinion.
Very, very clearly, yes. It would have been a more casual game.
I think there's another point to that. You talked about the status, mm-hmm. which is very important. I mean, maybe your case was in 2011, 2012. Back then, maybe people didn't really know what esports were back then. Today, they know. So you have probably kids who grow up saying, I want to be an esports athlete, an esports player. But unfortunately, it's not like in football or basketball or tennis or anything where you find your club here in Luxembourg and say, I'm just going to enter the academy and be like any other kid and have the coaches who tell me training is at that time. No, here you have to find your times yourself, and you don't have that. The professional guys who tell you it's not good to train too much and everything, you don't have that structure. I think that might be bad as well, because you have to prove yourself and have good performances to be able to be called up in a club at some point. And when you're young, the only way you know to get better is practice, play, and you never stop. So that, in my opinion, that's kind of a vicious circle as well.
Yes. I won't start within my time, because even your question is about today. And I think it would help if clubs and teams it would help if they were structured much more like normal local football clubs, where everyone is accepted and there are coaches, training times, and
maybe parents even need to kind of become their kids' coaches, because for esports to grow, I think that's
a good, yes, and I can see that, yes.
Yeah, because parents need to acknowledge that it's a talent and that it's a real sport, but they also have to look after their children, because otherwise addiction will be worse and worse as the game develops.
So one way I think where this could improve is that people distinguish indeed esports and just gaming, which you have insisted on in this conversation as well. And so if your kid is good at a sport, and you are a parent who remembers how esports worked because you're a young parent, then you might actually want to insist on shorter productive play times.
Once you're addicted, the road to recovery is a long one. You need to fight your habits constantly and find your old reflexes back. But even if it's not easy, it's possible. Stefan did it, and he told me how.
The only advice I can give is cold turkey, so stopping abruptly. Mm-hmm. I did go back to playing sometimes. I had sort of, you know, when I got my life sort of on track again, I would say, okay, now I can play again. I think that is fine. But if you just playing 10% less is never going to work. So, and in my case, it was, I had to face some harsh realities and refocus a lot of my time on school, and I wanted it. And that's also the key point. No one told me at that point. I just knew I had to pick one or the other. And then I think I also then used some of the obsession from gaming I almost gamified a bit my grades. And I was like, okay, how can I be first in my class now?
Okay.
And that's also what I then did. And I think a lot of good gamers are able to do that.
Well, the first thing is really acknowledge that you do have a problem. You might try out controlled playing by setting times and stick to them, but if that doesn't work, then you lost control, and then it's probably better to get professional help. But one thing that might help is if you experience first symptoms and you start thinking about reducing your time, then talk to others, make it public that you want to play less, because making that public already is one step into commitment and puts up a certain social obligation to do so.
And if you really don't see a way out, there's always, as you said, the possibility to call a professional. And I guess in that case, we have associations such as Ausgespielt who are able to help.
Yes, of course we are.
So that's it for today's episode. To those who play a lot of video games, make sure to keep an eye on your playing time. To those who already fight addiction, I really hope this episode was able to help you in some way. Thank you so much to Stefan and Andreas König for their time and captivating answers. Don't hesitate to get in touch with Ausgespielt too if you're having a tough time. But rest assured, it's almost impossible to become addicted to a podcast. This means that you can listen to Hello Esports over and over again without fear. So make sure to press play on next episode too. See ya!